It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station.
It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Listen to me, I'm older and I'm wise.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is gonna be huge.
I believe this is gonna be our finest hour.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Taking you home on a Wednesday. It is hump day, and we are halfway there. Three down, two to go, and maybe that isn't the halfway point, but it's close enough. It's the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy. And coming up this hour, we talked to Scott Agnes about the embarrassment last night that the Pacers put on the floor in falling big to the Milwaukee Bucks, 115-92. Another game where the Pacers offense, best in the league, has trouble scoring.
Yeah, and it was we were talking about some of the lineups that Rick Carlisle was putting out there, just not getting it done as a team collectively, just not good enough.
Just a horribly coached game by Rick Carlisle,
absolutely.
A guy that's been around long enough that he should know better than some of the matchups. And it seemed like Carlisle was always wanting to respond to what Milwaukee was doing instead of forcing Milwaukee to respond to what the Pacers were doing. He was forgetting the Pacers were the better team last night. They were more talented. And Milwaukee should have been the one having to react to the Pacers. And instead, it seemed like Carlisle was always trying to guess what would work against that Milwaukee lineup. When Milwaukee went short, what did the Pacers do? They respond with Isaiah Jackson, who's barely even played in this series. All of a sudden, Isaiah Jackson's out there with key minutes. Because when Milwaukee downsized, the Pacers went with Jackson. Well, if I'm Doc Rivers, I'm thinking, I'm going to stick with that lineup because it puts Siakam and Miles Turner on their bench.
Yeah.
Two of the guys they need offensively. And so it's just some really questionable things. McConnell on the floor with Halliburton. How are they coexisting on the floor together? Here is the problem. What happened on two different occasions where Halliburton drove in, kicked it outside? Guess what happened? McConnell was left all alone. But you got to have a kick out to a shooter. He is not a shooter. Yeah, he's made some threes. He is not the guy you want getting that kick out pass. And you can even tell he didn't want to get the kick-out pass. Sometimes you're so open, you have to shoot, even if you know you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
You watch McConnell shoot those two threes last night. He knew he wasn't making either one of them.
Yeah, I don't know about McConnell and Halliburton on the floor at the same time either. It's just two pass-first, driving, you know, kind of guards, and it's just not what I would expect to work.
Yeah, you can double Halliburton on the drive with the guy that is guarding McConnell, and then it's like, we'll give him a three.
Sure.
He's not going to make it, and he didn't.
Nope.
But not a good night for the Pacers, losing big to Milwaukee. And now that puts the pressure, I think, from Milwaukee, it now puts the pressure on the Pacers.
Absolutely.
Because if they don't win Game 6, they got to go to Milwaukee for a Game 7 and probably see Giannis and Lillard. At least you've got to go into Game 6 feeling like that's going to be what you face if you lose that game.
Absolutely, and it's just kind of setting stage for a very potentially upsetting series. But we'll see. Game 6 first.
4-6, 8-6-2. By the way, last night when we talk about the roster and how Carlisle was changing things up, first of all, he played his starters last night 28 minutes less than he played his starters in Game 5, obviously in Game 4.
Yeah.
Obviously in Game 4, the Pacers won the game. But he played them 28 minutes less. That meant more minutes were distributed among some of the reserves. He played a deeper bench. He also gave Obi Toppin the most minutes he's had over the last nine games. He had 12 points, which is kind of the average he usually scores, somewhere right in that vicinity, and he scored it playing more minutes last night.
Yeah, the thing is, it was kind of at the end of the game there. He did hit two late threes, had a late layup when the game was kind of already out of reach. But he did get to his nearest season averages, yes.
And what was up with Pascal Siakam at the free throw line?
Oh, that was bad.
He's a good free throw shooter.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's just not a 1-for-5 guy.
No.
And he missed 4 out of 5 free throws last night.
Got to be better than that.
Got to. Otherwise, you give Milwaukee some motivation to just hack him.
Right, and that's not what you want
either. And play him physical. They want to play him physical.
Right, and that also would slow down the momentum of the game, and Pacers thrive in games that have a fast pace of momentum.
Knicks last night, blew a 6-point lead with under 30 seconds left. Tyrese Maxey, the star, had a Sixers down by 6. Maxey hits a 3-pointer and 1.
Yep.
When the Knicks inexplicably foul him.
Yeah, Mitchell Robinson did not need to jump on that.
No, he jumped, got himself caught in the air on a closeout, the last position you want to find yourself in, and allowed Maxey to step in, get the contact and the bucket, and then he gets 4 points on that play. And then Josh Hart splits a pair of free throws.
3-point game.
Yep, and all of a sudden Tyrese Maxey comes down, and the Knicks are supposed to be fouling.
Yes.
And nobody fouls.
Nobody fouled. You can even see Tibbs yelling on the sideline to foul. So.
Yep.
We were talking about which loss would you rather face if you're a fan of either of these franchises. Would you rather just have your team just never be in it and lose by 15 to 20? Or would you rather be up by 6 with 30 seconds left and then blow it?
Here's the problem. It's hard to compare these two as oranges versus oranges because of that Giannis Lillard factor with the Pacers series.
I get that.
Every extra game in that series is a chance that those two come back and play for Milwaukee.
Oh, scary.
We knew they didn't play last night. That's why it would have been the safe thing to get it wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give Milwaukee a chance to extend the series and give them hope that Giannis and Lillard miraculously are well enough to play tomorrow night. But every time the Pacers lose, that gives Milwaukee hope. But, you know, with the Knicks and the Sixers, it's going to be the same lineup. They played a close game. Knicks should have won it. I even though the heartbreak was significant for Knicks fans, and it was probably tougher on the fans, probably overall it's better to be a New York Knick than a Indiana Pacer today. Because Pacers might have questions about their confidence.
It's a young team.
They haven't been here before. They haven't closed out a first-round series in 10 years.
And like you said, the pressure's on them now because, like you said, they have that in the back of their minds. Hey, if we don't win this Game 6, we could be seeing Giannis and Lillard for Game 7.
And if shots don't go in, remember, the whole key to that big win in Game 4 was because they couldn't miss three-pointers.
Right. Franchise playoff record.
If shots don't go in, can they still win? And they have to do it in front of the home fans, which adds another layer of pressure.
Mm.
It's going to be a very, very important night tomorrow night down in Indianapolis for the Indiana Pacers. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. By the way, Mastodons pick up a recruit out of the portal.
Hey.
Men's basketball this time. We talked to Maria yesterday about all the women that are joining the program. And men's basketball picks up a 6'6", 200-pounder out of Loyola of Chicago.
Awesome.
Yeah, he originally from Ferndale, Michigan. In high school, he scored 23 points per game as a senior. He was a finalist for Michigan Mr. Basketball. Mm. He had 2 All-State accolades as a senior with Metro Detroit Dream Team and Michigan Associated Press Division II All-State. Posted 21 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists per game in his junior year. So this guy was a high school stud.
Sounds like it.
And then he went to Loyola as a freshman last year, as a redshirt freshman. And he played in 10 games, about a third of the games, but only averages 5.4 minutes per game. Mm. So he just didn't get a lot of chance to get in the rotation. And therefore, his stats, very small sample size, because he just didn't get to play a whole lot. But a 6'6", 200-pounder really fills a void. In fact, Mastodons could use one more guy like that. 6'5", 6'6", 6'7".
But you've been talking about how they need one of those longer wing-esque players.
The whole lineup was 6'3 and under.
Right.
Or 6'8", 6'9".
Right.
And so there was that big void between 6'3 and 6'8", where you needed length on a perimeter position like a wing.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have anybody like that. Similar to IU's roster a little bit, as far as having, they had the absence of maybe that midsize wing. You had the 6'7 Mbako or 6'8, whatever Mbako is. But for the Hoosiers, the one missing piece was three-point shooter.
Yeah.
And for the Mastodons, the one missing piece is having that 6'6, 6'7 guy that can match up against a tall guard or a small forward.
Yeah.
That's more a traditional small forward. Because, you know, if you look at the Mastodons roster last year, they were playing 5'8, 6', 6'2, 6'3.
And those guys were having to defend some guys that were 6'4, 6'5,
6'6. Anthony Roberts was guarding centers. He was 6'4 guarding a 6'9, 6'10 guy.
Yeah.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
And so this just helps give you a little bit of flexibility on your roster.
I like it.
46862, give us your thoughts on this Wednesday. Love to hear from you. Don't forget, we've got the big summer kickoff in the Summit coming up.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's going to be an awesome time. Today's weather just gets you even more fired up because now you know what? The weather actually can be nice here in Fort Wayne.
It's possible.
We're going to be up on the rooftop. Just imagine if it was tonight.
Oh.
We'd go up on the rooftop, enjoy this sunshine, this warmth, enjoy the icy cold beverage.
Mm-hmm.
The wine in a box.
Not from a box.
No, it's not from a box, no.
That's your wine.
That's my wine at home. The wine, the beer... They got draft beer. You get to enjoy that. All part of your ticket.
All you can eat food.
All you can eat food.
You know I remember that.
Yeah, that's Adam's favorite part of it.
Yep, and then the first 100 people that buy tickets will also get an awesome aluminum commemorative cup with the 1380 The Fan logo, Parkview, the Fort Wayne tin caps, and Midwest box breaks.
Yes, and there's also fireworks that night. It's a throwback to the Wizards. It's all happening May 23rd. We'll be in the Summit up above the 400 Club out in center field. And this is usually a group seating area. So normally you would have to be connected to a group that has reserved that section.
Yep.
Well, now your connection is you're a listener to our group. And so we are taking our seats and saying, hey, you want to come? Join us. And it's just $40 a ticket. It's going to cover all the food you can eat, the beer, the wine. And a great vantage point up high above center field.
Oh.
Hope to see you on May 23rd. Buy your tickets, $40, great deal, and reserve a spot. And again, you want to be one of the first 100. I know the tickets are going pretty quick, so you do want to be one of the first 100 so you lock in that commemorative cup that everybody will get if you're among the first 100 to buy a ticket. You can get all the information by going to our website, 1380thefan.com, or we also have some information posted on our social media at facebook.com/1380thefan, and of course on X at 1380thefan. Well, we've had almost 20 hours or so to absorb what happened last night, and even though we witnessed it live, it's still just hard to believe that we were seeing what we were seeing. The Pacers, not only how they played, but some of the combinations of rosters that were on the court together. It felt like a regular season game, a meaningless regular season game that might have been a back-to-back. It didn't feel right last night. Scott Agnes, of course, who covers the Pacers for Fieldhouse Files, joining us right now on the Sports Rush guest line. Scott, how do you explain what we saw last night?
It is a repeat of what we had seen all season, Brett. It was a case here where ultimately the Pacers met a team that was underwhelming in terms of, right, Giannis out, Dame out. And in doing so, they've never stacked well against the lesser performing teams this season. We've talked about it several times, and I think that was again the case. And I go back to what TJ McConnell said on the air, on the record, a couple months ago, saying, yeah, man, our maturity has to be better. And it speaks to the character, probably the inexperience, and where was the leadership, and why do you even allow yourself to get to this point? Is the frustrating thing in all this. But it just felt like I was watching a DVD from something in January, a game earlier this season.
Well, and I kind of feel like the Pacers should have been prepared that the closeout game, regardless of rosters, the closeout game is going to be the toughest one to win. That's at least the theory. And you know, the only person I think you can go to really get some good advice about how that intensity level amps up a little bit and what you're going to expect and trying to close out a team even when they play with a inferior lineup is Pascal Siakam. Does he have control of the locker room? Is he a voice that's loud enough with the rest of the guys that they're following his guidance as far as what playoff basketball is about?
Yeah, it's hard to say only because he's been with the team for just a few months, so highly unlikely just yet, right? He's been with them for 40 games. On top of that, he's a quiet guy. Ordinarily, he's more follow my lead, mm-hmm. not follow what I say. Now, he did say after, I think, game two, Brett, that he's had to elevate himself and get out of his comfort zone a little bit because the team has needed it. So he has spoken up more. But I think in general, it's going to take at least a year for a player's voice to resonate and for the player likewise to feel comfortable enough to maybe call out guys or yell at them at the before the game or at halftime. We saw that same thing with Tyrese Haliburton. Now, he was much younger and had zero playoff experience. But you come in, you don't want to ruffle any feathers. You want to make sure you fit in rather than fitting out. And so I think he's done as much as he can to this point. But it's just a sequence where he's about the only guy with more than 25 games of playoff experience entering this postseason.
For as experienced as he is, I did not feel like Rick Carlisle coached his best game last night.
No, I think that's fair. One, you got to have him more prepared, and that starts with coaching. But then I hate sometimes how head coaches will default on losses and say, yep, this is on me, I take the blame. I think that's somewhat of a cop-out when, hey, the players are ones are out there, they're competing, they know the game plan, they know each other's skill sets. Yet at the same time, there is that figure, that stat that does not lie, that Rick Carlisle's team has not advanced in the playoffs since 2011. So he's wanting to end the drought as much as the Pacers, who have not advanced in the postseason since Paul George in 2014. So those are two numbers to watch if they can handle their business tomorrow in game six.
Yeah, I thought there were some signs that he had more panic because I thought he was reacting to Milwaukee and what they were doing and trying to come up with a combination that matched Milwaukee rather than forcing Milwaukee to match mm-hmm. what the Pacers were doing. It ended up leaving us with McConnell and Haliburton on the court together, which means Haliburton drives and his kick out is for a McConnell three. That's not good basketball.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point in saying, hey, you have the advantage. You have the more talented team right now with the Bucks' two players out. Play your style. Play your pace. Go get the rebounds and run and make them adapt to you. Now, we saw Doc Rivers try to junk it up, and they used new combinations. They used more new defensive schemes that Rivers said they hadn't even practiced before they installed them in game four and tried them out, and they worked. Like Danilo Gallinari, how many casual NBA fans, Brett, even knew he was still in the league right now? But I would agree with you. I didn't mind the backcourt lineup as much as throwing Isaiah Jackson in there, who has been cold, meaning he hadn't been playing at all this series. And you go in and try something different. I also didn't like how, even more so, early on in the game, he went back to that 11-man rotation. We didn't see that since game one. And guess what? They had success tightening that up and going to an 8-man rotation after game one. And so I'd like to see them go back to that. And to your point, be who you are, not trying to adapt to what the other team is trying to make you out to be.
Yeah, the starters played 28 less minutes last night than the starters played in game four. What can you do to turn this around? Are the Pacers okay, or is this one that could sting and maybe one loss leads to two?
The reality is you're unlikely to see Dame or Giannis. And so in doing so, you would have to completely flame out and lose three in a row and have your season end. I just don't see the likelihood of that. I think you come home, you rest up a little bit. Now, I am a little bit concerned about Tyrese Haliburton's low back, not his hamstring, but his back that made him questionable the last couple of games, more so in game four where he really didn't think he was going to be able to go, but the medical staff was able to take care of it. That's something to watch. Siakam was very underwhelming last night in a game where you need stars to elevate their game and lead. And there was that span, the critical moment, Brett, from like the final 2 minutes of the first quarter to the first five of the second where it was a 17-2 run and the Pacers scored one field goal. That was the difference, and that's why you pay Siakam and Halliburton max money, to go get their shot, to end the drought, and to keep the boat afloat rather than the sinking ship. And that's then when I thought you saw the coaching staff try to get too creative and change things up, which ordinarily, you know, doesn't necessarily work right there. You stick to your principles. And so I don't have huge concerns. Again, the closeout game is something new for this team to expect. That's not making any excuses for them. They laid an egg in game five, but I think they'll handle their business tomorrow night.
You mentioned Giannis and Lillard, and I said it's going to be difficult for them to bounce back in 48 hours. If they weren't good enough to play in the elimination game at home, I don't think they're going to be playing tomorrow night. Of course, the official report, they are still, I think, questionable. But about a game seven, because I kind of feel like Milwaukee really wants to target that. If they can just stretch this out to seven, maybe there's a chance. Where are you at as far as those two guys? What do you know and what do you expect?
Not much is known about them because they haven't done anything. That's where we're at right now. Giannis has not done anything beyond getting shots up and light movements since April 9th. Why would you throw him out there? Also, his conditioning would be off, right? If he hadn't played in a month, you know, he wouldn't even be a 70% of himself just in that if he was completely healthy and just returning from injury. Beyond that, with Dame, he didn't do anything yesterday, Doc Rivers said. So that leads you to believe, well, they're not going to push it either. So I'm guessing both will be officially doubtful on the injury report here coming up in the next couple of hours. But I would be stunned to see either one of them, not just in game six, but for the rest of the series, because it's not worth it for the Bucks, who aren't contending this season. And it's not worth it for their individual health. One thing goes wrong, they're lost for the next 12 months injury-wise.
What's easier in the NBA to bounce back from, a game like the Pacers had or a loss that gets away like what happened with the Knicks and the 76ers?
I think it's what happened to the Pacers last night, Brett. It's when you get embarrassed. It's when nothing went well. It's when everybody is disgusted and discouraged by what happened. Whereas, I think you tend to relax a little bit. Like think of the Knicks game. They should have held on. They should have finished that one. I don't think it's a real red alarm. It's not a red flag. It's more of a yellow, like, yeah, we probably should have had that anyway. Let's turn the page. Whereas with the Pacers, that's going to lead you to have the utmost attention. That's going to have just raise all and intensify everything in your preparations leading into the next game. So I'd much rather get blown out by 20 than lose on a buzzer beater.
Scott Agnes joining us here on the Sports Rush. All right, so the Indiana Fever had their media day. Did you bother even talking to any of the rookies?
Any of the rookies? There was one named Caitlin Clark.
So oh, yes, that's
absolutely.
Right. Might have been worth a little bit of time today. What did you learn?
Yeah, so it's a situation where we've been talking to them the last 3 or 4 days. It's a little different from the Pacers, where they have media day before day one of practice. So for the key players, we had talked to them already a couple times. But there's several key items. Playoffs is the goal. They're not talking championships, and that's the right thing, because there's a reason you've had the number one pick for the last couple of years. Secondly, you're looking forward to seeing what they look like finally out on the court. They've had 5 practices. It's only against themselves. And so they will do that Friday in Dallas. And the next key thing here for this team, and then specifically with Caitlin Clark, is how they travel, Brett. She's been traveling with Iowa and big-time programs privately.
Yeah.
That means you don't need security. You don't need special resources. She's going to be walking through Indianapolis International Airport and going to need some help. And so the Pacers are going to outfit her with – or Pacers Sports and Entertainment will provide security, not just – in the airport, but for this team and her specifically all season long. But that's one of those things that's going to be a huge talking point when presumably the players opt out of their collective bargaining agreement after this year. They want charter travel, and you can see why. Yeah. It's absolutely necessary for someone like Caitlin.
Yeah, and that actually she might be, again, a game changer, because it's going to bring all that attention. Does she have a blonde wig and one of those body suits that she can throw on to get through the airport?
It's funny you mentioned that. I had not even considered that, but honestly, that might be the best thing.
Yeah.
Give her a hat and a fake kind of wig, and then have security be a few steps away from her, so as not like side by side, and see Because, again, she's, I don't know, like 6'2"? kind of, maybe not even that, maybe 5'10", can kind of blend in generally with your crowd. Whereas on the other side, Aaliyah Boston, who's like 6'4", with long pink hair, that's going to be hard to blend in. So maybe they'll try that. I don't know. But it's something the team and everyone's going to have to deal with. And just another thing as she tries to adapt from the college game the last 4 years to now the WNBA.
Tomorrow's game sold out?
I don't think so officially. I've seen for the last two games, 3 and 4, that tickets were available day of, both in resale market and on Ticketmaster. But both games officially became sellouts. But I believe you can still get tickets at Ticketmaster and other places.
Of course, we will follow what you have to say leading up to the game, through the game, after the game. Scott Agnes from Fieldhouse Files joining us. Appreciate you, Scott.
All right. Thank you.
Yep, that's Scott Agnes. And, of course, Fieldhouse Files, you can get a subscription, especially if you're a Pacers or Fever fan. He's always got some great insights. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Coming up next, we'll go through the Colts draft picks, and I'll tell you officially whether I think they start, make the roster, or they're out of here. We'll talk about it next on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy. And, of course, over the weekend, we had the Colts NFL draft, and 9 players have been selected by the Indianapolis Colts. Clearly, they don't have that many roster spots, so the question is going to be, among the draft picks, who do I see as a starter next year? Who do I see making the roster? And who do I see being one of the cuts, never to be heard from by the Colts again? That sounds so cold.
That does.
But, Adam, you've got the names of the Colts draft picks in order from the top. And you give them to me, and I'll tell you what I expect from them in 2024.
All right. We'll start off with the Colts' first-round pick, 15th overall. It was Edge Leiatu Latu.
I think Latu is going to be a backup, but he will make the team. Now, when I say backup, that's only because I think they will be selective on when they use him, and they'll try to introduce him slowly to take some of the pressure off of being an everyday guy and having to be responsible for so many different reads and getting off different types of blocks. They don't want to expose him to a pulling guard. And so I think he will be obviously the defensive end of the future. I'm not sure that that position warrants him having to start off the top. Maybe some passing situations where you can focus on one thing. Use your best skill.
Yeah.
And then as he grows and as he gets through practices, I think he will, because they've got plenty of other guys they can throw out there that might be better against the run. That might be, you know, guys that have more experience in reading what a team might be trying to do. And so I think they will gradually build him up. But I think he's going to be a select down type of player. So probably not somebody you would classify as the starter.
All right. Well, I'm glad you said didn't say cut, because he got that Colts horseshoe tattoo on his arm.
Yeah. Not cut.
Not cut. All right. In the second round with the 52nd overall pick, they took the wide receiver out of Texas, Adonai Mitchell, A.D.
Ad Mitchell, A.D., we can call him whatever we want because he's going to be out there a lot. He is going to start.
Wow. All right.
I think he is going to beat Alec Pierce out for the opposite wide receiver of Michael Pittman Jr. I think he's that talented. I think the Colts are that high on him. And let's be honest, Alec Pierce doesn't have a long future with the Colts.
No.
I think he's a one-contract guy. I think once his rookie deal runs out, I think Alec Pierce will be let go. Could sign him maybe for a bargain price. But the way you get a bargain price is you make him your backup.
Right.
Because now you don't have to pay him like a starting wide receiver. And so it makes a lot of sense. Put the rookie out there, make him your starter, classify Alec Pierce as a backup. Now Alec Pierce costs less when you have to renegotiate a second contract if you want to keep him.
Mm.
And so I am saying that Mitchell is a starting wide receiver.
Awesome. All right. In the third round, the Colts took offensive tackle Matt Gonzalez out of Pitt.
Guy's got a real good shot.
Yeah.
At starting somewhere.
Oh.
But he's going to be a backup.
Gotcha.
He will make the roster. But this, the one thing about it is he could compete for right guard. Mm-hmm. He can compete for center. He could. He's not likely to play center, but he does play guard and tackle. I think right now with what the Colts have, they're not going to rush him. They're going to let him come in and be a backup, be an insurance policy. He will make the team. I don't think there's any question because he's a guy that the Colts kind of covet, and he had a tremendous track record at Pitt as being a guy that could both run block and pass block. So he's going to have a role. We just don't know what that defined role is going to be, where he's going to play. And so he'll start out as an insurance policy as kind of a fifth lineman or a sixth lineman. But I've got him on the team for sure.
All right. In the fourth round, the Colts took Wisconsin guard Tanner Bordellini.
Got a very good chance of being the next starting center for the Colts. Not this year.
Okay.
Might be a year away.
Mm.
But I do kind of believe that Bordellini's got all the skills necessary to have an impact for the Colts. And if not at center, he can also swing over to guard. But I think his future is going to be as the Colts' starting center. He will make the team, but he'll be, again, depth in the offensive line.
All right. Well, the Colts made three picks in the fifth round. The first one they made was wide receiver Anthony Gould out of Oregon State.
Interesting with Anthony Gould. Because he's going to have to earn his spot by being the best return man on the roster.
Mm.
And because of the new rules on the kickoff game, the Colts actually took Gould. They could have taken someone else. They could have taken a different position, but they specifically targeted him because of those rules. And so he'll have a first opportunity to earn the starting spot in special teams. Not one of your top 22 offense defense. But he could be a guy that has a valuable spot as the Colts' primary return man. And that would also take some of the pressure off Dallas Flowers. It could take the pressure off Josh Downs and allow Gould to focus on one thing and one thing only, returning the football. He'll provide depth as a wide receiver, so that doesn't hurt. But the way Anthony Gould makes the 53 man is as a return specialist. I'm kind of borderline on whether or not he can cut it because he's not a big guy. It's going to be all about speed, acceleration, and escapability. But he's got a very good chance to make the roster. So I'll say he'll make the roster. I won't commit to being a starter, but I'll say he makes the roster. Now, I do believe this, Adam. I do believe that if he doesn't start, he probably doesn't make the – if he doesn't start as a return man – if he isn't the number one return guy, then he might not make the roster. But I don't know how that's going to play out. So I will right now, I'll just say make the roster because I don't want to say he's cut.
Okay, the second pick that the Colts made in the fifth round was Missouri linebacker Jalen Carlisle. All right.
At least that's how it was pronounced. I'm going to go with Carlisle. It could be Carlisle, but he's the safety turn linebacker.
Yeah.
He's got the attributes that Gus Bradley really likes. He's athletic. He's quick. He can really chase down guys. I'm mixed. He's the perfect Colts linebacker, and the Colts probably need an extra linebacker, but I'm starting to look at numbers, and I think, can he really make this team? I'm going to give him a make the roster just because I think he's a project. And if the Colts drafted him as a project, they already know what they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting a guy who can really run, rangy, long arms. Then you've got to give him time to become what you expect him to be.
Right.
And that's why I think he makes the roster. He's not a starter.
All right. One more pick in the fifth round by the Colts. It was Auburn cornerback Jalen Simpson.
He's not going to make it.
Okay.
Chris Ballard has talked about how he loves the cornerbacks on this roster. I don't know that he's going to be able to do enough to make the roster. He's going to be competing with three other guys
mm-hmm.
for a spot. Ultimately, I think he's going to be the odd man out, and I'll just go ahead and go to the next guy.
Right.
I think Micah Abraham's going to end up in the same situation. I think the Colts are not going to have enough trust and faith in the rookies. Ultimately, it's going to be a 50-50 decision. They go with the guy that they know, and I think both these guys are going to be casualties for the final cuts.
All right, then we'll go to the last pick the Colts made in 2024. It was Oklahoma defensive tackle Jonah Laulu.
He's a defensive tackle. How does Chris Ballard let anybody cut him? He's a defensive tackle. If you don't have 10 or 11 on your roster, you're short, man.
Yeah, Ballard.
Chris Ballard loves those defensive linemen.
So what, you think he's going to stay?
He's gone.
Oh!
He's gone. Sorry, Chris.
Sorry, Chris.
Odd man out. I think you already have one too many defensive linemen even before we get to him. And now the question becomes, what do you do with Quiddy Pay? What do you do with Ebicom? You got Tyquan Lewis. I mean, you got guys that you got to kind of figure out where they're going to fit next year. And somebody's vulnerable.
Right.
But I think only one is vulnerable if he ends up cut. So I'm saying that, what's his name? Laulu?
I'm not trying it again. I said it once.
Laulu. Yeah. Don't worry about memorizing it or pronouncing it correctly. He's not going to be around.
But you do have five or six guys making the roster here.
I do.
All right.
I think there's some talented guys. I really do think that overall the draft has some potential.
Right, I agree.
I just don't like to give it early grades because potential can be a dirty word.
Yeah, it can.
Because that means they're not quite good enough now, but they got the chance to really be something.
Oh, I love that.
46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We'll take a quick timeout. We're going to come back, wrap it up here on this Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. I think we're on to something. Caitlin Clark in a blonde wig. No one would know it's her.
Genius.
Disguise. Until she went through security and they made her take the wig off.
Or the x-ray shows what's under her.
The x-ray shows something. Yeah, she's wearing an Iowa number 22 jersey underneath her coat. It's like, can you remove your overcoat, please? And underneath is like a number 22 jersey. It's like, uh-oh.
Uh-oh. We know who you're playing for.
But, yeah, the blonde wig, I don't think you'd recognize her.
No, I mean, especially.
She's got dark black hair.
Yeah, and if she did sunglasses and all that, you might be good to go.
One of those plastic glasses with the big nose and the mustache. Yeah,
we'll get her Groucho Marx glasses.
Yeah. I'm not, and put a tag on it that says I'm not Caitlin Clark.
That'll work.
Yeah, 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862 coming up May 23rd. That's the date to have marked on your calendar. It's also the date to have your tickets in hand, and you got to get those right away. We have got them for sale for our big night, the summer kickoff at the Summit at Parkview Field. Tim Capps will be taking on the Lansing Lugnuts at a 7:05 start, and we've got the reservations made for the Summit up top of the 400 Club straightaway center field. A limited seating capacity, but it is a group seating section that you could buy individual tickets for. This might be the only time you ever have an opportunity to go online and buy tickets individually to be part of our group at Parkview Field May 23rd. You've got the beer, the wine, all-you-can-eat food buffet will be set up, and a fireworks night, a throwback to the Wizards night, so many things.
And it kicks off your Memorial Day weekend.
And the Tin Cats will be trying to break their 22-game losing streak that night.
Unfortunately, man.
No, I didn't say that, did I?
Got to get some wins tomorrow.
Oh, got a couple of chances to get it right tomorrow. Doubleheader, which means... No Sports Rush tomorrow.
No Rush tomorrow, listeners.
We won't have any previews ahead of the Pacers game tomorrow night, but there will be two Tin Caps games on the radio tomorrow with Jack Gordon. Got to do a doubleheader solo from East Lake, Ohio.
Let's get a win, Tin Cap.
Yep, let's get a couple of them. And then coming up on Friday, we're back 4-6 to get you into your sports weekend. Big thanks to our guests that appeared on the show today, including new Lures girls basketball coach Mary Hathaway and Scott Agnes from the Fieldhouse Files. Have a great Wednesday night. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.